Meaningless. Meaningless, says the teacher. Everything's meaningless. Well, you'd be disappointed if I stopped there. And the teacher didn't either, but it's a reminder that I can just give up on the search for meaning, close down, live life as a kind of soulless shrug of the shoulders. That guy on the Vox Pop, you know, survive the rat race. Or do the opposite, just live the moment. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. Enjoy yourself, they said time and again. Surf, summer holidays in New Zealand. Yeah, there's nothing weak about asking the question, what is the meaning of life? And there's nothing dismissive in suggesting that not all answers hold that much water. I only get one shot at life. It's worth looking for the most robust answer I could find to what the point of it all is. And if I'm going to find meaning to life, I've got to find a story big enough to give it one, big enough to cover everything that life, death, the hereafter might throw at me. When Harry Beck designed the tube map in 1933, he was only paid 5 guineas, £5.25, for his original job. Yet his design is still the basis of today's tube map. He found a way of explaining the whole system from one end to the other. Well, if you're searching for the meaning to life, actually it does mean we are looking for a map that explains life, a map that can explain it from one end to the other. Here's one to try. Here's one worth exploring before we give up the search. Get hold of a Bible, would you, and turn to Colossians chapter 1. Probably easiest to find it by looking for page 1182. And Emily will just read to us a very striking paragraph beginning at verse 15.
Christ is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross.
Now, don't close your Bible. Look at the sweep of what's on offer here. It covers those twin essentials of any story that's going to provide meaning. It's got purpose and destiny. You see there at the end of verse 16, all things were created by him and for him. And we've only time to glance at the scope of it all, but here's why this is a map worth studying. And that little "and there's more" course, you'll see the flyers on the seats in front of you, they give plenty of opportunity to take it further. Here's a map that reaches back to the beginning of time. Saw that in verse 15? The firstborn over all creation, verse 16, by him all things were made. In fact, it goes earlier than the beginning of time, verse 17, he is before all things. Purpose needs a purpose giver. Here's one who could fit the bill. It's the person who makes something who knows what it was made for. That's why maker's instructions are so important. Without a creator, how do we find purpose? Richard Dawkins has famously said, "The universe we observe has no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music." Now, let's get real. It's not just Christian believers who shudder at that thought. If Dawkins is right, it's a bleak thought, not an attractive truth. It's got to be worth investigating the claims of a purposeful creator. He reaches back, yeah, he also reaches forward to the end of time. Look, pick it up again at verse 18. He's the head of the body, the church. Now, there's a line that at first sight is a bit of a come down, isn't it? It sounds as if he's some equivalent of the Archbishop of Canterbury. And when your CV is full of job titles like Creator, Sustainer, Savior, Judge, to fill it with minor posts like Pope or Archbishop of Canterbury seems something of an anticlimax. But read on. Because the writer explains, he means something far more striking. He says this, he's the head of the body of the church, he's the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead. The church he's speaking about, you see, is not some institution. It's a people. God's people, God's rescued people, and his whole plan and purpose is to give them a future. This speaks of one who's not just Lord of creation, but Lord and leader of the new creation, the new humanity that will not be restricted by death. Friends, the test of a worldview is not how you act in good times. The test of a worldview is how you act at a funeral. He's the firstborn from among the dead. The tomb, as someone said, is the womb from which Jesus emerged victorious. You know that sense that people have so often, a longing to leave a legacy, to go down in history, or at least someone's history, to have done something of value and significance that carries on. We long for it, and then kind of reality cuts in, doesn't it? And I think ahead occasionally, you know, 100 years' time. They've republished the Mark Mennell's Guide to All Souls, you know, and where will I feature? A footnote as one of the also-ran rectors who was there. I think, is that it? Was that all there was to my life? Well, Christ offers us a legacy here that goes beyond history. Reaches back before time. Yes, he reaches forward beyond time. One translation caught the spirit of verse 17. It said this, he was supreme in the beginning and leading the resurrection parade, he's supreme in the end. Though, of course, we are fearful of that kind of supremacy. So much of Western democratic government is full of checks and balances, isn't it, to make sure no one can have that kind of supremacy. We dread the abuse of the tyrant. We'd actually prefer to render our governments impotent rather than risk that. And what we fear in national life, we resent in our personal lives. Someone else being supreme in them. But see how Christ uses his supremacy. You see, he reaches down to rescue. Look at verse 19. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things. He uses his power, his status, his goodness to rescue, restore, reconcile, and no one and no thing is beyond his reach. Again, this other translation catches the flavor of it. All the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe, people and things, animals and atoms, get properly fixed and fit together, all because of his death, his blood that poured down from the cross. Have you thought about it? Our monarch in this country never carries any money on her. Someone else always pays. This supreme ruler pays himself the huge cost that we owe. And this map is so inclusive. I mean, did you spot the alls as Emily read it? They're there and obvious, aren't they? Look, verse 15, firstborn over all creation. Verse 16, all things were created by him. All things were created by him and for him. Verse 17, he's before all things. In him all things hold together. Verse 18, in everything he must have the supremacy. Verse 20, to reconcile to himself all things. At the center of this map is the towering figure of Jesus Christ. The map is really the Christ map. Staggering claims to make about any individual. Even more staggering if you think these were written down, 30 years after his early death? Well, there would still have been someone around who could have said, so to speak, oh yes, I was at school with him. If these claims are true, not to be living on his map, not to be caught up in the Christ story, guarantees I'll never find the meaning and purpose I'm looking for in life, even if what I'm pursuing are good things. Do you remember the film Cast Away? Tom Hanks's character Chuck Norris is in a plane crash. He lands up shipwrecked on an island. No one knows where he is. He survives. He settles down to cope. And central to life on the island is a volleyball that got washed up with him. Wilson, he calls it. He begins to relate to it. He even paints a face on the volleyball with some blood that came from a cut he got. He talks to Wilson. He argues with Wilson. His relationship with Wilson becomes more important to him than the relationships he left behind in the real world, the family, friends, loves. Actually, as the story of real life and the real world flows on, Chuck Norris lives out his meaningless life as a castaway. Well, miss out on Christ's story. Live disconnected from his map, and I'm left like a castaway. Oh, I can know what the person on the vox pop took to be the meaning of life, to love someone and to be loved back. But the deepest love of all will have passed me by. And I'll have been cut adrift from the ultimate meaning and purpose of life. Here's Malcolm Muggeridge, a famous figure on British television in the 50s and 60s. He spoke here at All Souls more than once. It's hard to capture his stature. The television age was different then, but let me try this. He was as forthright as Jeremy Clarkson. He had the gravitas of David Dimbleby. His left-wing socialism was something like Tony Benn, if you like. And then later in life, he was converted. Connected with this Christ. Listen to what he said.
I may, I suppose, regard myself, or pass for being, a relatively successful man. People occasionally stare at me in the streets. That's fame. I can fairly easily earn enough to qualify for admission to the higher slopes of the Inland Revenue. That's success. Furnished with money and a little fame, even the elderly, if they care to, may partake of trendy diversions. That's pleasure. It might happen, once in a while, that something I said or wrote was sufficiently heeded for me to persuade myself that it represented a serious impact on our time. That's fulfillment. Yet I say to you, and I beg you to believe me, multiply these tiny triumphs by a million. Add them together, and they are nothing, less than nothing, a positive impediment measured against one draught of that living water Christ offers to the spiritually thirsty, irrespective of who or what they are. What, I ask myself, did life hold? What is there in the works of time past, now, and to come, which could possibly be put in the balance with drinking that water.